happy 35th anniversary to the cinematic debut of Basil of Baker Street. Your geek history lesson on the Great Mouse Detective is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And I'm Jason Toby Inman. Welcome to your Mind University, because this is the podcast where we talk about one character, one construct. And today we're celebrating a movie anniversary and we tell you everything you know about it in a little bit less than an hour. I love these episodes. We have movie retrospectives, as we call them. We have a great time. We always bring in a guest. And today is the Great Mouse Detective. It's celebrating its 35th anniversary. Thank you for doing math, Ashley. I'm not a math student and neither were you, but
I have it written down.
I forced you to do it. And we have a great guest today.
Mm-hmm.
One of our favorite guests, a multiple appearing Geek History Lesson guest. Let's just say, yes, he is the most. He's made the most of appearances. we're gonna say that right now.
Confirmed.
He's already chiming in because he's jumping at the bit. We are joined by the host of the Only Stupid Answers podcast, the writer of Chaos Theory, and also the co-writer of the currently on Kickstarter Hellbent comic books, returning GHL guest professor. Welcome, DJ Woolridge. Hello, DJ.
Thank you so much. Is your middle name really Toby?
No, it's not.
No, it's such okay. It's maybe the normalest middle name. Jason always has fake middle names.
Yeah.
It's the normalest one that he's gagged so far, but also the most correctly specific to the thing that we're talking
about.
Yeah,
I was thrown off because I feel like Toby's like a nickname, like a short for like Tobias or something. And it'd just be like, it'd be a very unique choice to have that as a nickname or middle name.
It has become an ongoing gag on GHL that every time I introduce myself, I have a different middle name. Mm-hmm. Usually they're gags. This one just happened to be a normal name. There is a fan out there, and if there isn't, I would love a fan to do it. One of the Mind University students. I think somebody has made a list of the middle names, and I would love them if they sent it to me, because I would love to see. I don't remember half of them.
Send it to us, and we'll send you back some GHL stickers.
GeekHistoryLesson@gmail.com. We'll send you some free stickers. But I wanted to give this for DJ, because as we've now learned, DJ, you are... We're just making the claim right now. We don't even know if this is correct, but you have appeared on GHL more than any other person. So, congrats!
It's either, like, truthfully and honestly, it's either DJ or Steven Schleicher.
I would think it's DJ. I think it's DJ.
Yeah. Let's keep it that way. Let's make it. Anytime anybody's starting to beat me, just have me back on.
That's fair. So DJ, right before we get into some Disney talk, you have a pretty badass comic book on Kickstarter right now, and I want you to tell all our Mind University students about it. And listeners, you need to pay attention, because I also support this comic book, because it is kick-ass and it's hellish, as some might say. So DJ, tell us all about it.
Yeah, if you go to hellbentcomicbook.com, you'll be able to check out the Kickstarter for Hellbent, which is kind of like, I compare it to a lot of the classic Vertigo comics, so like Preacher, Sandman, pretty much the opposite of the Disney movie we're talking about today. But the elevator pitch is basically, there's a young trans woman with incredible supernatural abilities that is on the run from a kind of a religious cult. And so she has to team up with an arcane assassin named Nick, who I kind of compare as like a combination of John Wick and John Constantine. And they have to work together to survive. And so that's basically what's going on. So you've got a lot of like action, supernatural adventure. You've got some horror elements, you've got some comedy, but there's also, for all the more intense adult themes, a lot of it is about finding yourself and about inclusivity and trying to create a positive story that is also, like you said, like kick-ass, something that is really exciting to read. A lot of the comics, you know, when we were growing up, that kind of pushed the boundaries and allowed a space within the comic storytelling that for people and characters and stories that couldn't really exist in the mainstream.
Very Vertigo-ish, you would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those, I don't know if this happens with you, when sometimes, you know, you have an idea and you start exploring it, and it's not until people ask you to explain it to them that you're like, oh, this is what we were doing. Like, I don't think.
Yes, I will say it. Nothing hones your sort of comic book pitch for your idea or even your movie or your screenplay until you have to go on a bunch of podcasts and suddenly say it 50 times. And you very quickly knock away all the chuff and be like, yes, no, it's this.
And then by the fourth time, you're like, I hope no one's listening to all of these because I just said the same elevator pitch.
Yeah. Even that, I'm sure it's similar with you. Like, so when you write the copy for the Kickstarter page and then you do the copy for the press release and then it's the same thing.
It's a constant rewrite.
But you can't say quite the same thing.
Yeah. You can't say it quite the same way. So it's like, you know, sometimes when you're reading the Kickstarter page, we'll refer to Nick as like an arcane assassin or an occult hitman, or it's all the same vibe. But yeah, so definitely, it wasn't until like when it was talking about preaching it or when it was talking about promoting it that I realized
DJ, back up. That's the way you should say it. You should be like, when I'm going out there preaching about it.
When I'm preaching about Hellbent, we're spreading the good news of Hellbent. I realized this is a throwback to the classic Vertigo comics. And it's funny because even though we have a boom in indie comics right now, I think about, I believe, mutual friend Mark Russell in his comic Second mm-hmm. Coming mm-hmm. and the controversy that sprung up around that. And then you read the comic and you're like, but wait, they... Preacher was published 20 years ago, and this is controversial.
This is Warner Brothers.
Yeah, and so even now, comics like that just don't. Even though we have like a Preacher show and a Boys show, and now we've got Sandman coming to Netflix, it's interesting that even though a lot of those stories are getting more mainstream, even in comics now, it's even with stuff like Black Label and stuff like that, we're not getting stories quite like this, and so. You know, when I was first playing with the idea, I reached out to Jana July, my co-writer. She and I grew up together. We were in high school together. We've been friends and collaborators since then. And I thought she'd be the perfect person to work on this with. And she really gravitated to the idea as well. And then, as you guys know, once you have your outline, you have your first couple scripts, you're like, okay, well, we need an artist. We need to see if somebody actually wants to work on this book. And we've got an incredible art team. We've got Heather Vaughn. Who's worked on a bunch of like doing art for games like Kids on Bikes. And we've got Ellie Wright on colors and Haley Rose Lyon on letters. And we've got amazing variant covers by some fan favorite artists like Nicole Gu and Danny. And I'm just really, please go to hellbentcomicbook.com and check it out. And just if for no other reason, to check out all the amazing work that this team put into it. It's an amazing creative team of women and non-binary people that are really turning out amazing, amazing stuff. We've got tarot cards that you can get along with, original tarot cards that you can get along with the comic by C.A.P. Ward. I feel really honored to be up on a team with these creative, amazing people.
Yeah, it's a pretty awesome project, everybody. So please go check it out. I'm very excited about the metallic or the foil tarot cards. I think they're really cool. And I'm going to ask DJ a lot of questions about them off the air. But definitely go check it out. What's that very simple, because you do also do this very smart thing, of what's the very simple URL that people just need to remember?
Well, you know, that's something I think that was something that you gave me, the hellbentcomicbook.com. And I also should mention while I'm on the show, Jason and Ashley have been very patient with me because it's been 3 years since my last campaign. So there was a little bit I was pretty nervous going back because the game has changed. And so they were very patient and helpful with me as I asked a lot of questions about, you know, the best way to package this that would be the most appealing to everybody. So thank you both. And yes, hellbentcomicbook.com.
Well, that's only because DJ, you've helped us out so many times. And speaking of helping out, we're now going to help out Ashley.
We're not going to help out the company trying to monopolize the United States entertainment industry.
That's right. Disney. Yes, we are. That own 30%
of
Hollywood.
Please hire all of us. We are very employable.
Yes, we are.
Ashley, we're talking about the Great Mouse Detective today. Why and what is why? So DJ, I just need to let you know, Ashley has had this on the GHL schedule
since last year.
And she was like, we are doing this. And there, you know, we always have our meetings about like, oh, should we do this episode? Should we do this episode? And what's the order and stuff like this? And this was the one episode that was locked into place for like 6 months, no matter we could do it. And that's why I was so happy that we were trying to figure out how to bring DJ onto the show. And I was like, man, the only show we got is Great Mouse Detective. Can you do it? And you were luckily like, A-OK.
Well, I'm going to going to be honest, I was a little bit nervous at first because obviously it's as of this recording, it is launch week. So it's like a little bit hectic. And then I saw that the runtime is like an hour and 17 minutes. I was like, oh, yeah, it's fine. This is a lunch break. I can do this. Not a problem.
We watched this after we watched In the Heights, which is about three times longer.
Yes.
So Ashley, why The Great Mouse Detective? Why do you love this movie? Why have you been like, we are doing this?
Because Sherlock, first of all things Sherlock. If anyone is a super, super long time listener and heard our episode zero, our pilot episode, which does not exist anywhere, I think.
It's only on the Patreon.
Anymore.
Yeah, it's only on the Patreon now.
I was going to say, it'd be hard for anybody to have heard if it doesn't exist anywhere.
It did exist for a while, but it threw off when, remember when iTunes was like, everything has to be numbered? It threw off our numbers.
Yeah, it threw off because it was technically episode zero because it was our like rough pilot. We didn't want to claim it as episode one and it wasn't about a character. It was literally us just talking about Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
iTunes, I think 3 or 4 years ago was like, every episode must have an episode number. Now they've completely ignored that. And so we had to delete that episode to have the correct numbering.
I always like it when iTunes sends out like a memo like, hey, we're changing the algorithm, so now your listeners' numbers are going to go down. It's like, oh, cool. I don't know why that's the case, but all right.
It's very similar to YouTube. It's like every change YouTube makes is just worse and worse.
They're like, oh, you're not Conan O'Brien? Mm-hmm. We're not going to actually support you in any way.
By the way,
we like his podcast. But
we do. But he did invent podcasts. We should know that. In 2019. Yeah.
I met that man. He's a very tall boy.
Oh, really?
You're quite tall, DJ.
I am quite tall. And I think that like I just did a show with the Valley folk. Mm-hmm. And Elliot, it'd been a minute since I'd seen Elliot. And he was like, oh, you're so tall. And it feels like tall people react to it more because we're not used to either being eye level with people or looking up to people. So I know when I was in an elevator, or speaking of Valley folk, I was actually in an elevator. I believe it was Joe and Steve. We were doing a junket and Conan walked in. And of course, we all like, you know, the air leaves the room because it's like, oh, it's a honest to God celebrity. But it was weird because it's like he's basically the same height as I am. And it completely tripped me out. But anyway, sorry, I've derailed the whole conversation.
It's okay.
Well, no, I think it's perfect because now we're going to talk about somebody who's never at eye level, Basil Baker Street.
Yeah, he's a little tiny mouse. What do you think? He got like 3 inches tops?
If that.
The only thing we're going to talk about smaller than a hobbit. So I love all things Sherlock and Holmesian, depending on which adjective, depending on whether or not you hate the BBC version or not. And Great Mouse Detective is having its 35th birthday.
Yay.
So when people are listening to this next week, July 2nd, 1986 was when this was released.
It's about to have a midlife crisis.
We have the same birth year. I'm about to have a midlife crisis.
Well, I can't wait to see your racing green sports car.
Thank you. Do you have a preferred Holmes?
My favorite, I am very attached to the Benedict Cumberbatch version because that is the version that got me really into the lore and because he looks like a sexy alien. But I am also a huge fan of, for a classic Holmes, Basil Rathbone, who Basil of Baker Street is named after, who played him in the movies, the black and white
movies. It's a good gateway Sherlock. I mean, it did blow up. It was one of the hottest shows in the world.
Just watch
when
first two seasons and then nothing else ever happened.
I do feel like there's defensible stuff in the seasons that fall. There are some good moments. And also, I want to say that isn't Basil Rathbone, isn't some of his audio clips used in Great Mouse Detective?
Yes, sir. And we'll talk about that when we get there. But also, that's fine. I love the BBC Sherlock, the 2010 version, so much that when I saw Andrew Scott on the street of Palm Springs, my two friends and I chased him into a furniture store to tell him how great he was.
Andrew Scott, of course, plays Moriarty, everybody, in the BBC Sherlock.
He's also the male lead of Fleabag.
He's also
incredible.
He's become quite hot. He's
always been quite hot.
Yeah. In the last couple of years, become really hot.
Yeah, after he was in a James Bond movie.
I always think, I meant to say that line where there's that line from Zoolander where it's like, Will Ferrell's character is talking about Owen Wilson's character and Will Ferrell's character goes, he's so hot right now. And every time he talks about the character, he's like, he's hot. He's so hot right now. So Andrew Scott, that's what I feel like. He's so hot right now. He's so hot right now.
Andrew Scott's really incredible. He's a really talented actor.
He's really good. All right. So Ashley, are we ready to hop into the 10-cent origin of The Great Mouse Detective?
Yeah, let's do it. So The Great Mouse Detective is the 26th Disney animated feature film. It was, of course, produced by Disney Studios and distributed by Buena Vista Distribution. It's currently streaming at the time of this recording on Disney Plus for anybody who is listening and hasn't seen it, needs a refresher. It was directed by John Musker, Dave Michener, Ron Clements, and Bernie Madison. This is the same team that would go on to do The Little Mermaid and Aladdin, two other movies that I avowedly adore, so no shock that I like this one. With a story by Peter Young, Vance Gary, Steve Hewlett, John Musker, Ron Clements, Bruce Morris, Matthew O'Callaghan, Bernie Madison, Dave Michener, and Mel Shaw. So I've got to admit, I'm shocked that the script is any good.
Yeah, that's a lot of
a lot of cooks.
Oh boy,
a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And the script spent 4 years in active development, which even for Disney
that's
is
a long time. Wow.
The music is by Henry Mancini, who famously composed the Pink Panther theme. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to point that out specifically because I think the soundtrack is so good.
It's pretty good.
I really like his Sherlock theme. The budget was $14 million, and it was slashed in half after the failure of Black Cauldron, which immediately preceded this. But its total box office was $38.7 million, so it did just fine.
Let's be honest here. DJ, have you ever seen The Black Cauldron?
I have not. But when you, I know that it's got, it's I want to, oh, but that's a bummer. That's a bummer. Cause you want, cause sometimes you like, you'll hear stuff about like the movies, like Disney Berries, like Black Cauldron is it's in the vault. It's like thrown in the back of the vault where the cobwebs are. And it's one of those like, yeah, but maybe it was actually good. Like I was just actually talking to my wife about Event Horizon, which is a movie I actually really like.
Yeah, Sam Neill, Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, and she looked it up and like I think on like IMDb or something has like a 2.7. I'm like, that's not that. No, it's a good. It is the CG has not aged well, but the movie itself is really solid. So it's like sometimes these movies that have not as beloved reputations are better than we remember them. It's a bummer to hear the Black Cauldron is not one of them.
It is a bummer. It's not. That's the reason why I was like, the reason it bombed is because it's not good. But I would argue that, to your point, DJ, that The Great Mouse Detective is one of these movies that Disney likes to forget that it made. And I actually think they shouldn't, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
I agree. If their marketing team was smarter, this would have been all over the place in 2010.
Please continue, because these are based on some books, right?
They are. They are based on the Basil of Baker Street series of books by Eve Titus and Paul Galdone or Galdoni.
Galdone.
I don't know. I apologize. The stories focus on Basil of Baker Street and his personal biographer, Dr. David Q. Dawson. Together, they solve the many crimes and cases of the mouse world. They live in a place called Homestead, which is a mouse community built in the cellar of 221B Baker Street, where Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson famously lived. There are 5 original titles. There are 3 ones that were published a little bit later, and they were published from 1958 to 1982. And that might seem like, wow, that's really close to when the last Sherlock Holmes story was published. Shouldn't it have been copywritten? No, because Arthur Conan Doyle hated Sherlock Holmes and put him in the public domain immediately. The movie stars Vincent Price, Barry Ingham, Val Benton, Susan Palatchik, Candy Candido, Diana Chesney, Eve Brenner, and Alan Young. Vincent Price, I'm assuming most people know who Vincent Price is.
Oh, yeah.
Very Google him. Very famous actor.
Very memeable.
One of the best episodes of The Muppet Show ever stars Vincent Price.
True.
Vincent Price is a legend. I love Vincent Price.
He was asked to audition for this movie and stated that he would have been insulted when asked to audition if it had been for any studio other than Disney. And Alan Young, who provides the voice for Flaversham, who was Olivia's father, was also the voice of Scrooge McDuck in the original incarnations. And when we watched it, Jason pointed that out immediately.
It's the same exact voice as Scrooge McDuck.
The exact same voice.
Like the minute he said a word, I was like, that's Scrooge McDuck.
I'm not as versed on Scrooge as some other people, but the second I heard the voice, I was like, wait, I know that voice. Like, I know that voice.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I want to bring up in this section is that John Cleese was originally cast as the voice of Basil, but had to be replaced. And be honest, I think that's the right choice.
What do you think, DJ? I agree with that. I kind of think that I don't really know the actor that well that plays Basil.
Barry Ingham. He's most famous for playing Basil, but he was a British stage actor. He played Sherlock on stage.
I just think John Cleese would have taken over the movie.
It would have been John Cleese. It wouldn't have been
Basil. What do you
think,
DJ?
I think if you can hire John Cleese for anything, you do it.
All right, fair.
Hard disagree.
All right, so let's move into the meet cute. That's where we're going to talk about the first time that all three of us have ever seen this movie. It's our term that we stole from Reddit Comedy, and we talked about how we meted it and cuted. DJ.
Yes.
Had you seen this movie before we asked you to watch it?
If you'd asked me before I watched it for this episode, I would have said no. And then I watched and I was like, oh, I've definitely seen this movie and promptly forgotten most of it. So I can't tell you when. So let's just say right now. Let's say right now was the time.
Okay, fair enough. Ashley, tell your story. When did you first watch The Great Mouse Detective?
I can't tell you exactly when, but when I was growing up, we had a large wooden box that I think my father must have built that was like maybe 4 feet by 3 feet, and it was painted a really heinous like pastel yellow.
That's a big box.
And it was huge. That's and a it big was box. All it had in it was Disney VHS tapes.
All it had in it was The Great Mouse Detective.
It was that was where they lived in that little Baker Street.
78 copies.
I mean, there were like several times as children we would empty it out and just like lay in it because that's what you do when you're a child.
Oh boy.
It was really big. And one of the ones that we had was The Great Mouse Detective. So like I watched it a lot as a kid. And then in 2010, I saw the first season of BBC Sherlock. And then I really got obsessed with Sherlock Holmes. And I have watched this several times since then. And I have a Basil of Baker Street action figure in our room right now.
From when was the action figure made? Is it kind of like a newer one?
So yes. Yeah. So around like 2008, I want to say Disney did this line of toys where it's a Mickey Mouse figure and they paint it over with other Disney characters. I'm sure there's a name for it. Kind of okay. Like how Funko is kind of all the same figure, but with a different yes. coat of paint slapped on it. So it is like a Mickey Mouse shaped body painted over to look like Basil. And the illusion is not as good as you would think it is considering they're both mice.
See, I thought you meant it was like a figure like the newer Funko figures. Cause I have this like the Darkwing Duck they made a couple years ago that looks amazing.
Oh, you know, they never merchandise.
No, they're never going to make this.
The Great Mouse Detective.
I mean, yeah, who knows? That's crazy.
Jason, where did you first watch? Because as we were watching the movie, you were like, I remember this.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen this movie since I was a kid until we watched it for last week for this. But I will say, I know this was a movie that we rented in that those, yeah, the big white plasticky VHS Disney, only
it
Disney.
It made that squeaky sound when you opened it.
Yeah, I don't know why Disney enveloped all their VHS types in this like soft white plastic.
They're called clamshell cases.
Is that what they are?
Yeah, okay. People will turn them into purses.
Well, they're apparently they're super valuable now because like they're worth a lot on eBay because like apparently
don't
people
don't watch VHS. The quality is garbage.
But I know that this was a movie that we rented from we didn't rent, but we got from the Walnut, Kansas Public Library. So there you go. Shout out to the Walnut, Kansas Public Library. That doesn't probably exist anymore.
The other fun thing for me about watching this is remembering all the scenes where I was like petrified as a little girl.
Oh, this movie scared you?
Yes.
The bat. The bat, I think, would be.
Fidget in the oat. When he busts in through the window for the first time and it's that big mouth full of all those teeth. I've got a thing about teeth.
He's got a peg leg. There's a whole thing going on with the bat. Yeah.
And I found Ratigan really scary, particularly in the Big Ben fight as his like clothes are being torn off and he looks more and more like
a rat.
More
and more like a rat. Now, Ashley, do you want to, should we just talk through the movie and do you want to do the fun facts now or do you want to mix them in? How would you prefer to do that?
Yeah, let's talk through the movie. I know you had said that you'd found like a little breakdown or something of that you liked and then I will pepper in. I have maybe 25 fun facts and then we'll see where we go.
Well, let's just talk about the, okay, by the way, we should say this, spoilers for a movie that came out in
34 years ago.
So it's on Disney Plus. Go watch it. You don't need to watch Loki for a third time. Go watch The Great Mouse Detective.
Honestly, okay. Here's my hot take. Great Mouse Detective, better than the episodes of Loki I've seen so far.
Oh, boy.
Would rather rewatch. Don't tweet me. I'm not interested.
Okay. Let's move on from that. So the movie starts in old London town in 1897. Let's just talk about the teaser scene. It's basically Olivia and her father, Mr. Flaversham. Love that
Flaversham.
Name. Flaversham, excuse me. And the bat named Fidget coming into steal daddy. The first thing that stood out to me immediately was just the texture on the screen. Like there is just something about the pre-CG.
And there is CG in this movie.
There is. There's very early CG. Yeah. And we're going to definitely talk about that. But like, this is very much like 101 Dalmatians.
100001.
I went to school district 101. So that's why my brain defaulted to that. But there's something about the texture that like just makes this look like a moving piece of art. I prefer This is my favorite Disney animation style, because this is where I think you can see the artist actually using their hands. You can see the movement. It doesn't feel like computers or like artificially intelligence generating this. DJ, what do you think about the look, the style, the feel of the animation in this movie?
Well, I think I agree with you too, because it reminds me, whenever you go back and you watch something made pretty much like before the 90s, you know, when you're watching live action, I attribute that to watching it on film. And I actually kind of wonder if it's similar in this case as well, because, you know, it would have been projected on classic film stock. Like, that's how this movie would have been originally displayed, even though it wasn't filmed in the traditional live action sense on film. But similar to you, Jason, that feeling of like that texture, that lived in nature, that people's hands handled this, that aspect of it. It's actually something I recently watched the new Pixar movie Luca. And something I liked that they did there with their animation is, even though obviously it's very CG, it feels like CG artists are starting to learn that. And, you know, you look at the Lego movie and stuff like that, trying to add a little bit of that textured element to make it feel more tangible. Because I feel like that's something that was lost in the translation from traditional hand-drawn animation to CG animation, is that handcrafted nature. And so I appreciate that we're trying, as the medium changes, they're trying to reintroduce at least elements of that feel, if that makes sense.
I also love what you're pointing out about the opening sequence, because in a traditional Sherlock Holmes story, London is as much a character, and their neighborhood, which we've been to 221B.
We have. By the way, the Sherlock Holmes Museum in London is fantastic. Yeah, definitely go see it.
Loved it. Also very affordable something in London.
Very affordable.
But that area has like a specific feel and a tone in that era, which I think the movie does a good job at evoking. And I'm sure they're evoking probably more the feel of the old movies than what it actually would have been like in Victorian London. But I think that type of animation lends itself to that a little bit more as well.
Well, the movie, of course, then introduces us to our Dr. Watson analog, Dr. David Q. Dawson, portly mouse who has returned from military service, although I don't know what military service these mices were doing.
Well, that's because Britain was at war with Afghanistan.
I know. And basically it leads us into him finding the girl and meeting Basil of Baker Street. And Ashley, I want to ask you, as the Sherlock expert on this show, what do you think of Basil? Now, I'm going to ask you to put all your Sherlock Holmes fandom to the side. As a character design and as a character, and even the actress performance, what do you think of Basil? Do you think Basil is an interesting character? Do you think he's a flat character? What do you feel about him?
I think Basil is great. Mm-hmm. I love the design. He's obviously designed to look a little bit more like the actor, who had a very like patrician sort of nose and stuff like that. I think the voice work on him is great. Like, he just sounds like a cartoon version of Sherlock. He's a meaner version of Sherlock than you would get in like the story that this is based on specifically. Like, and he's so mean to Olivia, who is an actual child, like literally weeping on his doorstep and asking for help. I think Basil, I really like him. I like genuinely enjoy the character. I think he deserves to stand in like the Sherlock canon. I think Dawson is flat and not well drawn and not very interesting. And as our POV character, I think that is a shame. And I think the fact that he's based on a specific Disney animator, I think that's also a shame. But I find actually Dawson quite dull in the movie.
DJ, what do you feel about the Great Mouse Detective, the titular character?
Yeah, it is interesting what you talk about the introduction a little bit. It is there is a like a little bit of a different time whiplash, because the first time we see Basil is it was in what mouse equivalent of Yellowface, and then
also Sherlock did very famously in several of the stories, because he's supposed to be a master of disguise.
Cool.
Loved to dress up as someone in an opium den, and you're like, can we not?
Cool. And then Dawson is like, yeah, I was just in Afghanistan. It's like, Dawson was up to some imperialism. So anyway.
Imperialism. Some mice.
Yeah, what are the mice doing over there?
What is that?
Stealing the spices to not put it in English food.
even the mice are screwing up the police. Anyway. But yeah, so I think I kind of wish we had more this whole movie felt kind of like a pilot to me.
That's a great, I agree with you. Continue.
Yeah. So it kind of felt like, hey, here's the basic premise. Here are the characters. And it's one of those that like, it felt like a lot of setup, and it's a bummer because now 100% this character would be getting a Disney Plus show. Like that would 100, mm-hmm. if this movie had come out like 10 years ago, like it'd be getting a Disney Plus show now.
It still should. Why not?
Listen, it still could. Literally, the ads. I don't know if you've seen on YouTube, the ads for like Disney Plus are basically like, hey, we believe our story should never end and should go on for infinity.
Yeah.
So like they'll get to it eventually. But yeah, so I kind of wish we could have had more time to spend with the characters and maybe a little bit. And this might be nitpicky because I know it's a kids movie, but I think like a lot of some of the more, let's say the more basic Sherlock adaptations, there's a lot of like, he's a great detective, but it's mostly just pointing out the like, yeah, it's just the Dawson's dumb. Like, that's not like, mm-hmm. it's not like Basil's great. It's just Dawson's kind of like a dumb dummy that he's not seeing this. So maybe a little bit more of the great, it's somewhat, Batman gets this a lot. Like, he's the greatest detective ever.
Well, he's a like, Sherlockian archetype, so.
Yeah, so it's like, but it's mostly just noticing the obvious. It's like, well, that's me, you know, make it a little more challenging, maybe.
Well, he is also very heavily based on David Burke's performance as Watson, who we know from the Basil Rathbone movies. And a lot of Sherlock fans point to David Burke as the dumbing down of Watson and making him more buffoonish. And there's definitely room for that. But like, he is a surgeon and he has seen
military service. Surgeon.
Like, he is very smart.
Yeah.
But again, although kids movie. So I actually understand it a little more here than I do in the original black and white films.
And it also is worth mentioning that as we've seen in maybe certain political circles, that just being a brain surgeon doesn't necessarily mean that you are good or talented at other things.
That's true. But that's also like, fair. Why would a Sherlock or a Sherlock archetype keep you around if you were?
You know, it's interesting. The actor who plays Basil, what's his name again, Ashley?
Scrolling.
I guess I could figure that out.
His name is Barry Ingham. I always want to say Ingram, which is why I like to check.
Look, I think he's a solid choice. Weirdly, there are certain points in this movie in terms of Basil, and I guess this is just my perception of Sherlock Holmes more, is that Sherlock to me is always the most interesting character in all the Sherlock stories. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why you want to read a Sherlock story. And I find that there are many scenes in this movie where Basil is kind of flat.
Can you give me an example of that? Because like, I would really disagree with you on that. And that's probably my bias as well.
It's hard to like,
that's fine.
It's hard to like come up with a specific instance since I saw this movie a week ago.
But this is also a Disney movie. So like, they've put Olivia in the protagonist slot.
Yes.
And Olivia was supposed to originally be older and she was supposed to be a love interest for Dawson.
Weird. Yeah, glad we didn't do that.
If people are familiar, well, I mean, she was supposed to be like an adult, but if people are familiar with the Sherlock canon, she was more of like a Mary Watson type. And then they decided to make her, quote, a little girl, someone the audience can feel sorry for, end quote. So that's why she's a little girl. Because I think in The Rescuers, which was also the other mouse movie, there's no children, right? Like Bianca is a grown up.
Yes, that's
grown
true.
Grown up mouse.
That's true. I don't know. I don't know what it is. And I also don't know whether I'm just more spoiled by the modern Sherlock take of like that Sherlock is almost crazy and like insane. But I also agree with you that Dawson is such a fop. He's so fuddy-duddy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's almost too fuddy-duddy. And I think they were intentionally leaning in that to make him like Olivia's father.
Yeah.
You know, which is fine. But the reason I think Basil is flat to me, it's because Vincent Price's Professor Radigan performance is so, it's eye-grabbing, it's eye-catching, it pulls you in because that's everything Vincent Price does.
When we watched it, Jason was like, so nobody told him to pull it back.
Oh, yeah. That's what, yeah. Yeah. You can, like, he, and a lot of times, especially in his introduction, he seems like he's in a completely different movie than everybody else.
He also adds to my headcanon that all Moriartys are gay. Like, this is the most flamboyant version of Moriarty. And he's not Moriarty, right? He's a different character, but it's basically that
same.
Basically,
DJ, what did you think about Professor Radigan in this film?
Well, listen, I love Vincent Price. He's an icon. I actually spend a lot of time, probably an inordinate
amount. With Vincent Price?
What? With Vincent Price. Oh, that'd be amazing. An inordinate amount of time kind of wondering what the modern equivalent of Vincent Price is. Because I feel like from my brain, the way my brain works, I go, we had Vincent Price and then we had Tim Curry. And now we have dot, dot, dot. Like somebody that brings that sort of like, I don't even know how to describe it.
I mean, Tim Burton wishes.
I don't know who it would be.
But you know what I mean? The iconic, like, basically the iconic villain voice. Like, when you think of, like, a certain, like, almost a macabre, a campy macabre villain voice that has a very specific energy, and I just can't think of, like...
Well, but there's a flamboyance in both. Like, there's a very feminine energy
there's
in
also,
both of
there's
the,
also a
their
very
archetypes.
Much, a very musical theater
yes,
aspect to it.
Yes, I think that's what... Yeah. I'm like, Jason Isaacs is Captain Hook, maybe? I don't know.
Well, that's why I was going to throw out Clancy Brown, but Clancy Brown doesn't have the theatricality of Vincent Price.
No, he would actually beat you to death with his bare hands.
Oh, well, 100%. He's the Kurgan, of course.
Well, and it's interesting. I just rewatched Highlander in the past couple weeks, and I very much enjoyed it. But it's interesting you bring up Clancy Brown because the one thing I had with Rattigan is I don't know that Vincent Price's voice fits the way they animated the character. Like, he's built more like a Clancy Brown character, but he's voiced by Vincent Price. But I do like the more camp, almost the sassy aspect. Like, I know in the my favorite thing in the most recent X-Men relaunch is Sassy Sinister, that they made Mr. Sinister.
Oh, me too.
Super sassy. And I was like, yes, please, more. And I also, for the first time, just watched The Princess and the Frog. And which is another the last 2D animated Disney film, also from a lot of the creative people that worked on this as well.
Yeah, and this team is also the team that brought us such villains as Ursula and Jafar, who are also very like queer coded, flamboyant, over the top. I mean, Ursula's designed after Divine. So.
Yeah, and like I actually really enjoyed Princess and the Frog, but the part I enjoyed most was Dr. Facilier, and it's like, yeah, the Disney villain, it makes sense that we're doing the like Maleficent Cruella thing because the villains here are just more interesting. Like, they're just more, and I felt like it's also interesting that Rattigan, I think, he's like the only main character that gets a musical number. I think he's one of two characters that gets a musical number, and the other one is just a lady at the mouse brothel.
Yes.
Yeah.
The mouse brothel.
Well, it's funny. We were watching this and I was like, yeah, this is not a musical. And then they kept singing and I was like, I guess this is a musical and I forgot.
Well, you're just lucky that we didn't get like a song from Basil that was deduction, you know?
Or maybe that would have been amazing.
Oh, okay. There you go. I don't know. Maybe that was the secret sauce
we
were missing.
Does perhaps when they were developing this, when John Cleese was attached to it, he was like, I will not sing. Like some of the actors who were in The Heights recently.
He sang in Monty Python, though.
I don't know.
Whatever. So I want to talk about, there's not much to me to talk about in terms of the mystery, except for, I guess, like, do we want to get into a debate of what is the Queen of Mice about or just ignore? Because there is some things where you have to divorce yourself.
What do you mean, what is she about?
Well, what is she about? Like,
she's a queen.
Well,
she's like, about imperialism.
Yeah, but it's, okay, let's bring it into the real world here, okay? Okay, there was a moment in this movie where I was watching, especially in the Baker Street apartment, where I was like, okay, it would make more sense to me all the mice furniture and stuff was made out of like cobbled together human things. But
yeah, Jason was like, who's making these tiny mouse toothpicks?
It's all
tiny mouse darts.
It's all tiny dishes and tiny cups and tiny registers. And it's like, they have literally reproduced our world except at like 1 inch high. And I'm like, how? That is impossible. The infrastructure just doesn't exist.
Yeah. I wish in one of these movies and one of these, I personally am a sucker for I think there's this, he discovers Olivia in like a boot when she's crying,
sitting on top of liver pills.
Yeah, this every time when you're like, there's a world beneath the world. I'm a sucker for that stuff.
Have you seen Arrietty?
I have not.
Oh, you should. It's very good.
It's based on The Borrowers, so it does a better job at.
Yeah, okay. But their whole world is built like they steal stuff from our world, so it's all cobbled together.
So, but I think I would love in one of like this or like Bug's Life or something like that, where you just have in one of these scenes, you pull out and you see like a person seeing what's going on and being like, Wait, what's happening?
Or did I just see what I think I just saw?
I mean, it is hysterical to think that like they live in Sherlock Holmes' house and he doesn't know that they exist.
So we can move past that because again, it's a kid's cartoon, so I'm willing to let that go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is something I want to talk because I want to get to Toby, my namesake, and I want to talk about they. I love the idea that they live underneath Sherlock Holmes's house, but I also completely think that if there was an entire mouse civilization underneath Sherlock Holmes' house, he would know about it and he would kill them all.
To be fair, Sherlock and John live on the second floor. Mrs. Hudson lives on the first floor. So they technically live beneath Mrs. Hudson's apartment. And Mrs. Hudson is lovely, but she's not as bright as Sherlock.
Who? That is a cue that because Ashley fixed it. She made it work. I will buy
but
that.
But we did see them. You also pointed this out when we were watching it. When Toby showed up, I was like, oh, this is super cool. Because like Toby's a character from the Arthur Conan Doyle books. He's not a hound. He's supposed to be like a street dog. But Jason was like, they don't notice that they're stealing his dog. And I'm like, well, he lives with the irregulars. He lives with like the street urchins who helped Sherlock out.
I actually did a joke. I did a joke where like these mice are constantly barring Toby. And like Sherlock Holmes is like, I haven't seen my dog in 4 days. Where the hell is he? He's like, Toby's dead. I think he's dead.
That's the new mystery, is to solve what happened to Toby.
Yeah. Sherlock Holmes and the mystery of Toby's corpse.
And it all leads to, you read the mystery of Toby, and it ends with him finding a small mouse civilization.
And then building a shrink ray. DJ, what do you think? Do you like that they exist in the world of Sherlock Holmes, even though they are meant to be an homage to Sherlock Holmes' world?
Yeah, I'm into that. I'm into it because it kind of maybe explains, I guess it could work either way. My assumption in this is that this mouse person is putting on the affectations of the person he lives with. It is a little wild that he runs into his own Watson, but I think you make a good point that it might have been more interesting if the stuff was more cobbled together. But I also like the use of scale. It's actually one of my favorite things. Speaking of Disney movies, it's one of my favorite things in Zootopia, is that instead of the animal, you know, a lot of times when you anthropomorphize animals, they all become like the same kind of vaguely human size. And by keeping the scale, it made it, I think scale is something very interesting to play with. And so by having them not only exist in the human world, but having it be literally the world of Sherlock Holmes, I think was interesting to me.
I want to mention before we move on really quick, the scene from a Sherlock movie that DJ brought up earlier. I also want to say that, so this was in production much earlier and it was in development for a long time. The failure of the young Sherlock Holmes movie is one of the contributing factors to pushing this back.
Which was a big bomb of the 80s.
Look, I'm going to say this.
I've never seen it.
I've seen it. It's bad.
Okay.
Brian Cox's son is bad in it.
Oh, boy.
Basil is named after Basil Rathbone, who is, they sample his voice from the 1966 reading of The Red-Headed League, where he voiced him in that film. And that came out 19 years after
he died.
Yeah. So this is like a posthumous nod back to his time defining the. And for a lot of people, before the BBC series, he is what most people think of when they think of an image.
The classic
of Sherlock Holmes.
I like that they sampled his voice. I actually think that's a really nice wink back to the past.
And he also Sherlock Holmes in the book canons mentions Basil as one of his aliases in the story The Adventure of Black Peter. From the name, you can probably guess there's some questionable elements by contemporary standards in that story. And the movie was originally going to be called Basil of Baker Street. And then one of the Eisners, my notes don't specify which one, I'm going to say Michael.
Yeah, probably.
Probably was Michael.
He said, no, we're calling it The Great Mouse Detective because Basil feels, quote, too English. And it's like, it's set in London.
Yeah. Me, spoiler like- alert.
It's so funny. I think this was on the Wikipedia for this movie or something like that, that one of the other animators, one of the writers thought, like, hated the idea that they changed it to The Great Mouse Detective. And then he like went through all the other Disney movies and was like, well, if you give it like a great, the Great Mouse Detective title, this is what it would be like. So like he said, like a Little Mermaid would be like the mermaid who wants to see the sky.
I actually have the list right here. The seven little men help a girl, the wonderful elven who could really fly, the little deer who grew up. That's my favorite one. The girl with the see-through shoes, two dogs fall in love, puppies taken away, and a boy, a bear, and a big black cat.
The girl with the see-through shoes, though, is low-key still a good title for something.
Yeah, I just love the little deer who grew up.
That movie is also sad as heck.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
I have a quick question for Ashley. Yeah. And I hopefully I'm not jumping ahead too much, but it's kind of like, I feel like the resident Sherlock expert. Is this one of the first times that we kind of got a swashbuckling Sherlock? Because there's the whole climactic, he escapes from a classic like Bond type trap that Radigan puts him in. But there's the whole clock tower sequence that I started thinking of, like, you know, they kind of presented Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes and of course Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock Holmes as like, these are the Sherlock Holmes that can get sort of in a fight maybe. But then you see this, it's like, oh, I'd wonder if they'd done anything like this prior to The Great Mouse Detective, where Sherlock is kicking and running and, you know, having a action sequence, essentially.
Well, that's true, because he's definitely not like that in the books. He generally like walks into the room and says the crime and solves it.
You're wrong, Jason.
I mean, he doesn't fist fight every book.
Okay, so in Sherlock Holmes book canon, Sherlock is a boxer, a good boxer, who often disguises himself to go out and win prize title fights.
I get that. I totally understand that, actually. I've read the books too.
I'm just saying, like, he is combative.
Yeah.
He has several very famous scenes where he does fight people, usually with a fire poker or a fire brand. Mm-hmm. And if you want like a particularly swashbuckly example, in the Reichenbach Falls storyline, him and Moriarty literally fight on top of a waterfall.
Well, yeah, I know that's the classic version, but like maybe I'm misremembering them wrong, but I'm kind of like, it does, or maybe that's the idea that the Basil Rathbone episodes have so permeated culture that they.
So Basil Rathbone played him in movies.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm just gonna be quiet. But Sherlock.
No. It's just there have been like several television versions. Like Sherlock has been played on television by like 50 people, like tons and tons and tons and tons of people. Jeremy Brett is the gentleman who plays him in the 80s series, and that is where, because it's sort of set a little bit later than the original stories, that's where he gets a little more adventure-y. And my theory is because in the 80s, we had things like
Indiana Jones
and like the adventure serial was back again. But the other thing, like I mentioned this earlier, because Arthur Conan Doyle hated that people loved Sherlock more than anything else he wrote. So because he released him to the public domain almost immediately after he was first published, there's a billion versions of Sherlock, and there are a lot where he is more adventure-y. Like, there's often a lot. In my opinion, Sherlock doesn't leave England ever. Ever, 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 ever. But there are a lot of earlier pastiche where, like, he goes to Africa and, like, bushwhacks around, or he goes and settles Australia, or he comes to America, like, before it's America. Especially because Irene Adler comes and settles in Florida, and stuff like that. So to go all the way back and answer DJ's question, I think this might be the most popular, like, to a modern audience, version where he's more action oriented.
Well, it's definitely very much inspired by the Reichenbach Falls, because we do have the fall in this movie, but I do agree with DJ that like Sherlock Holmes stories are not generally action adventure stories. They're not. Yeah. They are very classic mysteries where it's like, we are coming to a solution. Oh, we're going to trick a person, and maybe there's a singular fist fight. But this is like, we're climbing up the we're flying in the sky. Yeah. We're going over here, and there's guns, and oh my God.
Yeah. Like he only engages in action scenes in the stories kind of when there's no other option. So like, you're definitely right in that. And that's, I think, a utility of the Watson character, which Dawson doesn't do, is because he's ex-military. Whenever someone needs to be shot,
Watson pulls out his gun and shoots over, them.
Yeah. Watson is often trigger happy. Yeah. Like, that's kind of his functionality.
if someone is an imperialist.
I mean, you know, if someone is going to not be around. So
let's
long about, answer for a short question.
Well, let's talk about the climax here, because again, it's tough for me because, like, especially in mystery stories, they like sort of divide everything up by scenes. I will say that I do love I love that Professor Radigan basically outfoxes Sherlock or Basil, excuse me. And his ultimate death trap is like a James Bond death trap times five.
I love the death machine.
I love that he's just like, the thing that makes it, and I swear to God, I don't know how you would find this out. I think that the part of the death machine that Professor Radigan is like, you're going to listen to this song of me telling you how awesome it's going to be that I beat you. That has to be a Vincent Price improv. That seems so specific to Vincent Price that I think, I was like, there's no way they scripted that. No way.
I don't know, because there's not a ton. All the history and like the fun facts on this are mostly from the development era. And Vincent Price is obviously like super, super dead.
Yeah.
But I've always thought one of the best sequences is when he's explaining it. Before he turns the record on and he's like, thwang, thunk, splat.
Yes. Yeah. Which I also think was a Vincent Price improv, I believe.
There's a lot of stuff in here where you're like, he made that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's wild that like he has a cat. He basically has his own like Felicia. Rancor that he can feed people to. And then he's like, nah, not good enough. How long do you think it took him to put that contraption together?
Well, he's got like 30 or 40 mooks that we see in his opening introductory number.
But can I tell you the thing? It's like an anvil, right? That would be so heavy for
me. That would be a lot. Yeah. But can I tell you? And see, that's what I'm saying. I wish there was just one scene where you had a human, and it'd be even funnier if it was a live action human walking, turns, sees this mouse tied to a rat trap with an anvil over it, and be like, nah, I'm not dealing with this. I don't know what's going on here. it's wild to think about the energy and the effort that it would have taken to just put that. Oh, but the thing that when I was watching that, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. The things that stuck with me most, Ashley, the bat at the beginning, because especially when you're young, is like, yeah, this is actually really kind of freaky. And when Radigan feeds the guy that calls him a rat, the drunk mouse to Felicia, I'm like, wow, this is dark.
There's a lot of,
and
like,
I remember it.
Intoxication, and there was a lot of drunkenness
on champagne
in this.
Yeah, a lot of drunkenness, a lot of smoking, and I think that stuck out to me because of the conversation that Emma Stone couldn't have Cruella's classic cigarette for the new movie, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's just a different time in the 80s, I guess.
The thing that stuck out to me, and I think, and I was looking at the wiki here, and it might be because I didn't realize that they re-released this movie, and that must be when I saw it, because the clock tower sequence
was cut, shortened.
It was always in every trailer, like the shot of the camera like going up. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we watched it this time, I was like, oh, that is definitely CG. And it kind of really surprised me because I did not think that Disney was using CG animation this early. And I want to say like the clock tower sequence and some of the camera angles they're doing with the animation really still looks great. It looks awesome.
The shot where Basil has Olivia and he like grabs onto
the rope or the chain
and it like
whatever.
Goes upward. Like that's iconic. It's amazing.
So what do we think about, we can just talk about the entire climax here. I mean, what do we think about, I do love that Olivia, is Olivia right?
It's a little girl, yeah.
I love that Olivia does go off, like, because I understand your comment, DJ, where like, yeah, this almost seems like a pilot and I wish we got to see episode two. But I also love that the movie ends with Olivia like just kind of leaving, because it is very much like the episodic nature of Sherlock Holmes stories, where it's like it's always the new case. And I love that they end with, oh, here's another case coming in, because that's always my favorite part of like detective stories or even Mission Impossible stories. I like that you always get to see like, oh, here's a piece of the next episode or the next mission.
So knowing that Olivia was supposed to be older, the lady mouse who comes in at the end and is like, I'm sorry.
Was that her design?
My theory, I don't have any confirmation, is that that was her original design.
Oh, okay.
That ending is so interesting because it actually reminds me more of like a classic noir detective, like 20s, 30s PI, where the lady like comes in and like, if it was shot like that, you definitely would have seen her silhouette through the window on the door first.
Totally.
But it's just that it suddenly the vibe shifts to for me at least, to that kind of like energy.
I also like in the ending how Jason was talking about Olivia leaving, because in Sherlock hates women. It's pretty much a big theme of the original stories. He only kind of likes Irene Adler, but they often, those characters often get a like Shakespearean servant treatment where they are smart and they are capable and they do know a lot. And I love the running gag where he can't remember her last name. Like he can't be bothered to learn how to say her last name. And then in their last goodbye, he still gets it wrong and she just smiles at him and she's like a 4-year-old.
That's so funny.
She's like, you're not going to get any better. We're just going to move on from this.
Yeah, I'm just going to tuck this away as a fond memory and tell people the story for the rest of my life.
Ashley, do you have any other thoughts you want to say about The Great Mouse Detective before we go into Best Actor, Best Scene, and like some fun facts?
Yeah, I just want to point out a couple more things. So we alluded to this earlier, but The Great Mouse Detective is the last work to feature Eric Larson, not the Savage Dragon guy, as an animation consultant.
That guy's still working and he will be pumping out Savage Dragon forever.
Yep. It's never going away.
Larson was the last of Disney's 9 old men. If you're not familiar, they're a group that had defined a lot of Disney's theatrical direction since the 30s, are sort of the oldest of the old guard, and the character of Dr. Dawson is modeled after him as a tribute, so that's cute. Bill the Lizard from Alice in Wonderland appears in the pub scene. He's like the only lizard in the whole movie. Dumbo appears in the toy shop scene, and the name of the dog Toby comes from the Sherlock Holmes story The Sign of Four, which is actually a really good Sherlock story. If you're interested in the short stories and you've never read any of them, The Sign of Four would be a great place to start. Those are all my facts.
Sweet. All right, let's talk about who we all think was the best actor in this movie. And let's start
Vincent Price.
Well, DJ, kick us off then.
Vincent Price. It's got to be Vincent Price, right? He's Vincent Price.
Ashley?
So I think Barry Ingham does a good job holding it down, but Vincent Price is the only person in this movie having fun. So I think you have to give it up to him, but I think Barry Ingham does a good job holding it down.
I mean, I honestly think it's the guy that sounds like Scrooge McDuck because he was just like, I got one voice. It's all I'm going to know. It's obviously Vincent
Alan
Price.
Alan Young is that.
Yeah, Alan Young. Thank you. I couldn't pull it. It was definitely Vincent Price. And I was surprised at how well his performance held up. Mm-hmm. Even I was worried that he was going to be a little dated, and it was not dated. It just shows you that if you're classic all the way through.
And if you commit and you commit hard,
yep,
we're there with you. Yeah, you can do really silly things.
Well, also shout out to Frank Megatron Welker for voicing Toby. It's always just wild when you look at like any animation thing, like, you know, Peter Cullen, Frank Welker, those guys show up in everything.
And Frank, his widget voice is actually really good. The I'm okay, boss. Hey, okay, yeah. You know,
Fidget.
Yes, there you go. Ashley, since this is your one of your favorite movies, the movie we want to talk about, what do you think is the best scene in this movie?
So the best scene is the clock tower scene.
Oh, okay.
My favorite scene is when we first see Basil after he's removed his racist garb and he is doing all of the Sherlockian pseudoscience, trying to figure out all he had to do was put the two bullets underneath. But he does the whole thing with the potion later for the paper. Like, I love all of him doing the deduction stuff. And there's a minute where he's trying to test the type of paper that it is, and the whatever liquid is going through these tubes, and he goes, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. He's just like waiting for it to go through. And I still say that in my adult life because that's my favorite scene. I just like watching. If you're going to do a Sherlock pastiche, I want to watch the character think and use their brain. And I think that the animators and everybody working on that scene did a really good job at making that palatable to a young audience. But the clock tower scene is the best scene.
DJ, how about yourself?
Yeah, I have to go with the clock tower scene as well. I think it's fun and it's energetic. It's a cool climax. You get a classic Disney death where it's funny that, like, with the villain deaths, a lot of them are like they fall off and disappear into a cloud. And it's supposed to be, as a kid, you're like, oh, whatever, he fell. But like as an adult, you're like, because It's so high up. You're like, wow, that would blow. That would really suck.
He died on the way down.
I still have questions where, like, I know it's a cartoon, but like Basil's device that he survives, I'm like, no way. Not going to happen. You're dead too, buddy.
You really, with all the flying stuff, you can't understand too much about aerodynamics.
No.
Or it's not going
to
hold.
Yeah, the fact that they were able to get that balloon, the balloon device thing so close to Big Ben next to the river.
On a foggy night.
Not happening.
All right, Jason, what's your call?
I actually think the best scene is where they get Toby for the first time, because that is also the scene where you get to watch mm-hmm. the Sherlock Holmes scene. I like that they go into Sherlock Holmes's. I just think it's such a clever reference. It's such a clever wink. And yes, I know that technically the clock tower is like probably the best part of the movie.
But
that's the one that makes me smile, is the fact that like all the jokes about Toby and Basil, like, tells him to do this stuff, and the little girl can make the dog do whatever he wants, and
she's
Basil
got the crumpets in her pocket.
Yeah, she goes, "Yes, you want the crumpet?" And he's like, "Yum, yum, yum." And that dog, like, it would be a crumb to him. But anyways, all right.
I like it when his ear flops down and it suddenly turns into stairs.
DJ, I want to ask you the question that we ask in all our movie retrospectives: what do you think the legacy of The Great Mouse Detective is now in 2021, and does this movie hold up?
That's interesting. What is the legacy now? I don't know that it has much of one. I was actually just going through as we were talking. I went through and looked at the other Disney movies that like landed around this time. And there's so many movies that you forget exist. And on the one hand, I think it's kind of a bummer that this is one of them. Although, if I'm being completely candid, this movie did have trouble holding my attention. And so I kind of get why it's landed on maybe the more forgettable side of things. Although I can't help but think, like with the resurrection of DuckTales and stuff like that, that there could be a way that you could, and the popularity of the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock show, that you could update this for like a Disney Plus series. I think obviously you'd have to change some of the maybe the animation a little bit and the pacing and all that stuff. But I feel like there is a way, like maybe even hire Benedict Cumberbatch to play Basil. But there's a way that you could update it to exist as a Disney Plus show.
I think you totally could update this to a Disney Plus show. 100%. I think every time you say that, I'm like, yeah, this totally should be a Disney Plus show. Ashley, what do you think is this movie's legacy?
I think the legacy of The Great Mouse Detective is actually more tied up in the Sherlockian fandom and like canon of pop culture offerings than it is for Disney, because in the Disney canon, particularly knowing some of the things that these creators go on to do, like it's a solid middle of the road Disney movie. Like, it's charming, it's funny, it's short, it's blessedly short. Characters who stand out. Like, it does a lot of things right, but for some reason it just doesn't hit the way like The Little Mermaid hits or Beauty and the Beast hits or Lion King. But for a lot of people, and a lot of people from my generation, this was our first introduction to anything Sherlockian. It's usually The Great Mouse Detective or a rerun of the Jeremy Brett BBC series, if you're Canadian specifically, because we had that on TV a lot. And I think through that lens, like the people that I know who are still, who still watch this movie or who still share art from this movie or quoted are all people who are into the larger Holmesian canon. And in my opinion, even, you know, all things through the lens of time don't age well, I still think Sherlock Holmes is like one of the best things ever written. I still think it's one of the best detective stories ever written. And I think that this movie as a gateway to the rest of that canon and all that comes with it, I think it is more than worthy. And I think that that's really where it comes into its most prominence and its most larger importance in like the pop culture sphere. So any different thoughts from you, Jason?
I mean, I think you're absolutely correct that I think this movie's legacy is more affected to Sherlock Holmes than it is for anything Disney. Because Disney kind of, like what DJ was saying, I think Disney has forgotten that they made this movie.
I can't believe, and I don't know what the rights are like, because obviously this is a book, so the rights might have lapsed. Yeah. I cannot believe there is not a stage show of this. There are so many Sherlock plays. Yeah. You could make this a play or a musical so easily.
I can't believe that I can't buy a little tiny Funko action figure of Basil, because I think that would be badass, and put him next to my Darkwing Duck. It'd be really cool.
I'd buy it.
So I think
that's how you bring Basil back. You know how like every once in a while Batman will team up with Sherlock Holmes somehow?
Yes.
You have Darkwing Duck be like, actually, I was inspired by the Great Mouse Detective, and he teams up with Basil.
And they are doing a Darkwing Duck series. That's great. So, it's either you team up with Darkwing Duck or the Harlem Globetrotters. One of those two.
Maybe Scrooge, and he's like, wait, your voice sounds incredibly familiar.
Just get David Tennant to do both of them. That's very funny.
You're just watching an episode of Basil, and he's like, to the cult! Anyways, I think I have no doubt that Stephen Moffat was heavily inspired by the Great Mouse Detective, because there are a lot of, now that we've been talking about it, there are a lot of James Bondian elements in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The death trap, the taking over the queen, all that kind of stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, that's exactly what Moriarty's plan was in BBC Sherlock. Mm-hmm. So I think they took like the adventure-y aspects of this and really pumped it up to another notch, because Sherlock BBC is very James Bond inspired. I think it totally holds up. I just think that we now are very much about a faster pace of storytelling. But to be honest with you, like, I didn't have any problem keeping pace with this. And I didn't think it was boring. To be honest with you, I think most Disney animated movies should be this length instead of being 2 hours or longer.
I agree.
You know, because they all run out of steam. And I don't think this movie ran out of steam. I actually think this movie probably could have had a little bit more in there. They could have done a little bit more in the middle, but it doesn't matter because the beginning's really good and the end's really good, and who cares? DJ, we're going to you. On a scale, our scale for movies, or our GHL intern cat Brego, do we do it out of 5 or 10, actually?
It's 5.
Okay, out of a scale of 5 Bregos, 5 being the best, 1 being the worst, what would you give The Great Mouse Detective?
I'd give it a 3.5. I think it's
front 0.5 or the back 0.5.
Good 3.5. I think it's completely serviceable. I think it's completely watchable. I think it's this is one of the cool aspects of Disney Plus, is having access to something like this, which I think prior to that probably would have been a little bit difficult to like track down. And I do think it's interesting to see, because, like, again, looking at this list, it's like directly before Great Mouse Detective is The Black Cauldron, then it's Oliver and Company after, and then literally the movie after that is Little Mermaid, and we get Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin.
So
it's like
Oliver and Company all the time.
This is like an interesting fulcrum point, Billy to Joel. Be like, yeah, we're going to get into the Disney we know. And so it's an interesting transition piece, I feel like. But yeah, I think it's perfectly watchable. I think Ashley's point that this would be a good way to get young audience, like young audiences into Sherlock, I agree with totally. And on those levels, I think it's solid.
Ashley, how would you rank The Great Mouse Detective?
I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 Bregos, and that's definitely my personal bias because I like this movie and was so thrilled to watch it again. But also because I think this movie, for a Disney movie at this time, is one of the better offerings that we have. And I do think it mostly holds up. So I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 Bregos, because it's not perfect, but I enjoy it a lot. So Jason, round us out. How many intern Brego Keithies are you going to give The Great Mouse Detective?
I'm going to agree with DJ. I think this is a 3.5. I think this is a solid, on the higher end film of the Disney canon. I don't hate it. I would happily rewatch it, and I also would happily recommend it. But I'm never going to go out of my way and be like, this is my favorite Disney animated film. But I have definitely seen worse Disney animated films.
Oh, yeah.
You know what, to be honest with you, I'm just really surprised that this 1986 Disney animated film, a completely different period of Disney, pre the Disney Renaissance, held up as well as it did. I thought it really, really held up, much, much more solid than I thought it would.
There you go.
I was expecting to not like it as much as I did.
I was expecting you to not like it at all.
Oh, okay. All right, Ashley, let's go into our recommended viewing, where if you go to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading, the listeners can find stuff that we recommend. This one's going to be pretty obvious, but go ahead.
Yeah, so we're putting The Great Mouse Detective, the 4K most recently updated version of it, to get your hands on. And then also The Great Mouse Detective Mastermind Collection of Books. That is the full series if you are interested, or there's a tiny person in your life who might be interested in the Basil of Baker Street books. The covers look nothing like the movie, so don't sell them that way.
Okay. And we I didn't realize that we do teaching tweets for movie retrospectives, but I guess everybody, hey, everybody, we have a teaching tweet where Ashley's going to tell you.
We definitely do.
Well, you can find this tweet on Twitter at GHL Podcast. We're in less than 140 characters or whatever characters that Twitter wants. You can find Ashley's thoughts about this movie.
The Great Mouse Detective, the world's only consulting mouse detective, is pretty great indeed.
Awesome. Go find that at GHL Podcast on Twitter. And speaking of things you can find on Twitter, DJ.
Yes.
Where can they find your Kickstarter?
Well, you can find me at DJ Talks Trash.
No. I said your Kickstarter, DJ.
But I have tweets there about hellbentcomicbook.com. It's where I'm tweeting about it. But yeah, hellbentcomicbook.com is where you can go to the Kickstarter, or you can go to Kickstarter and type in Hellbent. Or again, I'm tweeting about it all the time. Any of that stuff. But yeah, please go check it out. I think you'll really dig it. If you like the Great Mouse Detective, you might like, there's detecting stuff that happens in Hellbent. It's just skewed a little bit more adult. It's a more adult oriented story.
Look, I'm gonna throw this out there, and DJ, you can tell me no on I'm gonna say movies and comic books.
Yes.
And if it's similar to the tone of Hellbent, if people like this, they'll like Hellbent. You say yes or no. Okay, here yes. We go.
Okay.
If people like Constantine, will they like Hellbent?
Yes.
If people like Preacher, will they like Hellbent?
Yes.
If people like The Gong Show, will they like Hellbent?
Listen, you know, there's some out there humor. There's no game show. It's not a game show, but maybe.
Okay. If people like DuckTales, will they like Hellbent?
You know, if they like kind of an older, grumpier character trying to mentor a younger person, there's some of that in there too.
If people like Hellbent, will they like Hellbent?
Yes. Listen, I'm a big believer that anybody and everybody will like this comic as long as they're comfortable with some more adult-oriented stuff. Jason, you'll appreciate this because you've actually read the first five pages.
That's right.
Five to six pages. And normally when I go on a show, I'll show people when they're like, "Whoa, adult-oriented, what do you mean?" I'll show them page two. And they'll be like, "Oh." So it's like, yeah. So, you know, it is skewed more adults, but I think if you're an adult and you're into stories told to adults for adults, then you'll be into this.
It's not
between Hellbent and this podcast, you're entertaining children of all ages.
Yeah. See,
it's nothing more scarier than you would see on HBO Max. I mean,
yes,
come on.
Very true. If you've read Saga, we're not doing anything as far as like maturity level. We're not doing anything different than that comic has done.
There you go. So
that comic has done a lot.
Look, if you like comic books, you're going to like Hellbent. So we're backers of it. We're supporters of it. So definitely go over there and support it. Also, you can support this podcast. You can listen to it on Spotify, SoundCloud, all the places you listen to podcasts. You can follow it on social media. Where, Ashley?
You can do that at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at GHL Podcast.
You can follow Ashley on Instagram and Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jawin. That's JAWIIN. And now we're in the last section of the podcast, the hashtag stick around, where we make sure you stuck through all the plugs. And Ashley's got a hell of a stick around. Go ahead, take it away.
Wow, this is so much pressure. So, friends, if Disney were to adapt another classic story, like Sherlock Holmes, using mice, which story should they adapt next?
DJ.
Wait, so if the premise is we're adapting a classic Sherlock Holmes story. Any classic with mice. Oh, my God. So now we're in kind of like a Muppet Christmas Carol, Muppet Treasure Island type situation.
It's the Great Mouse Christmas Carol.
Oh, snap. With mice specifically. Oh, my goodness. Hellbent. Hellbentcomicbook.com. Do it with mice. DJ. And it would be a very... I think it could work. Yes.
A modern classic, of course.
A modern classic. Well, you know, sometimes
that, ladies and gentlemen, is a salesman right there.
You know, anybody that's read the original Eastman Laird Ninja Turtles and then watched the cartoon, like, listen, you can turn anything into something that's all ages.
Very, very true.
Ashley, you got a choice for this?
Yeah, my easy choice is Pride and Prejudice because...
Really?
Yes, cool. I'm being like dead serious because Pride and Prejudice is very funny and very charming. It's a love story, which Disney is big on, and it features a big family. And in addition to the romantic story, there is all of these mirror narratives about like loving your sister and loving your parents and like an older couple being in love. So I think if you stripped it down to its bare bones... Pride and Prejudice, or any of the Austens, but Pride and Prejudice being the most famous, would make such a good Disney movie. And I just thought saying Blood Meridian was like a step too far, you know?
Blood Meridian.
Yeah. Mice Blood Meridian. I was actually thinking, as you're talking, I was thinking Mice the Road, which actually was a moment where I started thinking about the comic Mouse. I'm like, actually, there's a version where that could work.
Disney ain't touching that with a 25-foot pole.
Sure, sure. Okay, well, I look forward to the great Mouse Expanse.
The Mouse Watchman.
Watch
Mouse.
Watch Mouse.
It's already been sort of adapted, but I it's one of my favorite classic novels. I actually think Treasure Island with mice or animals would be really excellent.
Yeah, and Treasure Planet is different enough that I think you could do like a closer to the source material.
A lot of the Jules Verne stories, I think, would all be perfect for this.
Yeah,
20,000 centimeters under the fish tank.
Yeah, or something like that. Or
Jules Verne do the original Lost World? Was that a Jules Verne or am I mixing?
It's like Monster Island or something like that.
But it would be interesting if you did that with mice, because then it would be, instead of like traditional dinosaurs, it'd be prehistoric mouse size things. whatever dinosaurs were closer to mouse size. Now that's what we're dealing with.
Just these like little lizards.
Yeah. Whatever. What was the little ones in speaking of Lost World, Jurassic Park, the Lost World, the little tiny Calamimus or whatever they're called.
Oh, yeah. I don't know from dinosaurs, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we get it. Excellent. All right. So all great answers. DJ, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Geek History Lesson.
Thank you for having me. A pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to have you on. We know that you are our most booked guest. And everybody, go check out Hellbent. If you like everything in the world, you're going to like Hellbent. So, and that's no lie. You will like Hellbent. That's a GHL guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
You will like it.
Oh my goodness, you'll like it.
That's right. So everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Toby Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And Professor Ashley, will you please close out this episode?
Class is now dismissed.